What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Uncensored Podcast. And today, I'm here with...
Good Groove.
So, for those who don't know, Good Groove, a.k.a. Jaden, he was on the podcast back in December. And back then, he was kind of just getting his feet wet in this whole DJ thing. He really didn't know where to go. Had some ideas. Now, he's taken off. He's dropped a few singles. Had some big tours he's done this summer. And basically, that's where we're going to start is... In the summer, Jaden, you went to the Silent Disco Breakaway in Columbus, Ohio this summer, like right after graduation. Talk to us about that. How was that as like your first big experience, you know, as a DJ at an event like that?
You know, that was a surreal one for me because Breakaway, I mean, that's like a dream festival of mine to play since I started. And, you know, the Breakaway guys are amazing. Shout out Adam and Zach Rubin. They hooked me up with an opportunity I couldn't pass up. And, you know, being an 18-year-old kid, I mean, it's just to go play a stage like that, I mean, it's crazy because all these other guys are in mid-20s, you know, and I'm just a little kid, you know, trying to make a name for myself. And, I mean, that was one of the most important shows I've ever played in my life because, I mean, I got to network. I got to meet so many new people. I got to meet people that do what I love. And, I mean, it was just a surreal experience. I mean, Bobby Henderson, I met him down there, and he's like, I mean, he's the capital of EDM when it comes to connections. I mean, he runs DJ Lovers Club, and that's the biggest EDM page in the world. And I mean, it was just a surreal experience, man.
Yeah, because like I feel like, you know, being like so involved in sports, is I feel like a lot of times in a community like that, it's so good to learn from other people that have like made it or like are older and like they've been through what you're going through right now. So it's definitely good that you're like taking it from other people, like, you know, how athletes will like get moves from other people, like you're still learning like how to perfect your craft because, you know, you're only 18 years old still, and it's like you have so much room to grow, and because you're starting so early, it's not like you have time just pressed on you.
Yeah, that's a huge thing for me being 18. I mean, I'm ahead of the game right now. I mean, I'm putting 4 to 5 hours in the studio all the time. I mean, just grinding, bro. Just outworking everyone. I mean, I recently just did an interview with Audio Engine, and they asked me, they were like, what inspires me? Like, if I have a message, if I was to give a message to another up-and-coming artist, I mean, I would say, while you're sleeping, someone else is working, and that's a big thing I live by, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I mean, that's just... great that you got to go do that during the summer. You also did some other stuff during the summers. You got to go work. You did some stuff with Atomic this summer.
I did. Atomic was a big Louisville club. I played some pretty good shows there. And, you know, that show was a big one for me because that one created a lot of character development for me because I walked in there with a 4-hour set. And obviously I'm an electronic music artist. Like, that's what I make. I play electronic music in all my sets. And the crowd was just not an electronic music crowd. So I ditched my 4-hour set and just went straight off the head for 4 hours straight. And that's a skill level. That's a skill set that, you got to learn. You got to practice that. You know, you're not always going to play a crowd that wants to hear what you're going to play. Diplo told me, he said, a great DJ plays music the crowd knows they want to hear. An excellent DJ plays music the crowd doesn't know they want to hear. So that's just a big piece of advice that I've used for crowds like that. And another show I've been I would say my favorite set I played this summer was The Hub, actually, in Louisville. My hometown is my last hometown show before I came to college at University of Kentucky. And I mean, the owner of the club, Talmadge, shout out Talmadge, he told me, he was like, you know, maybe don't start off with the house yet, you know, try to work the crowd in. And, you know, I just went straight for it. I played house for 4 hours straight and absolutely ripped it. I mean, the crowd was energetic. They were loving it. They were jumping. The lights were going crazy. I mean, it was just an environment that I'll never forget. Playing a hometown show like that, ending my hometown tour on that show, I mean, it was awesome. Shout out, Talmadge.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very tough thing, like you just said, because the music industry is so biased and opinion-based towards what people like. Like, so many people are dead set on the music that they like, and a lot of them will never change into what they like. And I was like that for a while too. Like, I was always stuck on the rap side of things, but then it's like, as you like get more music into your palate, it just makes it that much better to appreciate the music. So it's like, but like you said, when you get a crowd that doesn't always like what you're going to play or like not doesn't respond, that's just a skill that you have to be able to, okay, they're not responding, I just got to switch it up real quick. Got to change something.
I mean, and that's a skill I feel like separates me from a lot of these DJs. You know, obviously producing is one thing, but being a DJ is a whole nother thing. I mean, that's something like a crowd likes. Obviously, like, I'll work on some sets, like I'll have some songs I know I want to play, but I really just go off the head for the most part, unless it's like more a festival scene, organized set. But yeah, like I had a whole 4-hour set planned and I could see that they weren't liking the electronic music. So I had to switch to go straight rap, hip hop. And that's just something that like you can't just learn on the spot. Like you got to practice that. Reading a crowd is one of the most important things when it comes to being a DJ. And that's one thing that when I came down here is, in Lexington, like I played, I played that Ole Miss weekend at the Hill, and we did crazy numbers, like some of the biggest numbers Lexington has ever seen. And for that to be my first show in Lexington, I mean, that also just feels surreal. I mean, that was the most nervous I've ever been for a show, because I mean, I've played in front of tens of thousands of people, and it's like, I'm playing in front of all my friends this time. Like, I got people to impress, you know? So, I mean, I was so nervous for that show, but, I mean, I went out there, I ripped it, and it was awesome.
Yeah, I'll get back to the Hill a little bit later down in this. Yeah. But I want to talk about a single you dropped, You Don't Know My Name. So, talk about how that came to fruition, how that came to just the lyrics, and how that everything just came together. And when did you think, okay, I'm ready to drop it?
Man, I could talk about You Don't Know My Name all day. I mean, that song is so special to me because Russ Guapo, shout out Russ Guapo. I mean, beautiful voice, the voice of You Don't Know My Name. Russ hit me up when I first started out producing, probably like a month in, and he saw like, you know, I was doing good when it came to DJing, but I had no clue what I was doing on my computer making music. I mean, I was clueless. I was just pressing buttons, trying to make stuff sound good together. And I told him I wasn't ready to work on a track yet. I said, give me 4 or 5 months. I'm going to lock in 6 to 8 hours a day, and we can get something going. Four and a half months later, he hits me back up. He's like, yo, let's work. And right when he texted me that, I was working on this beat. And I was like, this is perfect. Like, this beat would be perfect. And You Don't Know My Name was such a long, awesome, creative journey. Russ Guapo came over to my house. We wrote the lyrics to You Don't Know My Name in the studio with Chris Carswell. Shout out Chris for giving us studio time. And we sat there, we wrote these lyrics. And you know, it didn't work out. It didn't work out at all for the first month. You know, we worked on the song for 3 months, bro. And it just wasn't working. Like, we couldn't figure it out. We couldn't figure out the sound, how to make his voice suit the beat. And we just kept grinding on it. And eventually, he came over one day and we sat down, we talked about it. We were like, all right, how are we gonna make this work? Like, it's not really working out right now. We have the idea, we have the lyrics. How are we gonna make this sound good? And obviously he's got a beautiful voice. I produced a beautiful beat and we just thought, then we just put the song aside. We said, all right, this song will come. We'll finish the song. We sat in my room, I had my notebook out, and I was like, let's do a music video to this song. And we literally sat there for an hour straight, talking about the music video, wrote it all down. I wrote the whole script, I directed the whole music video, and we were just doing it for, you know, just for fun. Like, we never thought a music video was gonna come out. Like, we were just talking about it, manifesting it, you know? And then, about another month later, this will be the third month of us working on the song, I met John Wu. And John Wu, he's been a big mentor to me, one of the smartest guys in the industry. That's Mars's manager, which is also a huge artist from Louisville. And he gave me an opportunity that I'm so grateful. He gave me his studio whenever I wanted. Let me go in his studio, nicest studio in Louisville. Just let me go in there whenever I wanted and perfect my craft. And that's when I approached Lily. And Lily is one of the best engineers in Louisville. I mean, she can make anyone sound like Drake or Beyonce. Like, she's amazing. And I was like, Russ, bro, like, I think we got this finished. Like, we get in the studio now. I called him. He came straight to the studio. We recorded it. Bang. Song was finished. And it was a banger. It was awesome. And so we got the song finished, and we were thinking about release dates and stuff. And, you know, we were just thinking. And then the music video came back up, and I texted Alan Witcher, one of the best videographers in Louisville. He works a lot with Jay Wagner Group. And I contacted him. I showed him the script. We went to Atomic and planned out the whole video. Then I left for Ibiza. And it was hard for me to figure out when I wanted to drop the song, because I knew I was leaving for Barcelona, Spain. So it was a hard, like, time. The time difference is crazy. So, like, I ended up releasing the release date, or announcing the release date, and I'm pretty sure it was, like, June 9th. It was on a Friday. And I stayed up till 6 a.m. in Madrid waiting for the song to drop, because that was 12 back home. And I stayed up. I was so excited. I stayed up all the way till 6, and just as soon as it dropped, promoted it, sent it out everywhere. I mean, then we got back home, recorded the music video, and we just made a whole vision come true. And it was just crazy to see what you can do when you put your mind to things. And, like, I'm heavy on manifestation. Like, I mean, as some of you guys know, Jack, that's been one of my biggest mentors. Jack Harlow, that's been one of my biggest mentors, you know, and inspirations since I met him when I was, 13. And I watched him speak everything he wanted to do into existence. So I'm heavy on manifestation and speaking everything into existence. And that's what we did with this song. So it's just a beautiful song for me. It's a beautiful track to me. And it meant a lot, the whole process. It was awesome.
So obviously, you know, the song was great, all that. What was it like, though, from the video aspect? Not just, like, being able to hear it, but then be able to see it, like, in live action, like, see it go on Instagram Reels, on YouTube. Like, what was your reaction to how that whole process went down, like, when you were filming the video, and then just when it finally came out, how your reaction was just seeing how your work looked in video?
I mean, bro, like, one thing about me is, like, besides music, like, I want to be a creative. I want to start a fashion line. I want to direct. I want to be in movies, like, you know? And so, with that music video, like, I directed the whole thing. I wrote the whole script. And it was just a crazy experience, because, you know, I had all my boys, you know, I had the lads with me, and they were all cameos in the video. So that was a super cool experience to me, getting to bring my best friends from home into my music video. And I mean, we had people pull up. I told people, I need you here. I need you there. We're going to do this right now. We're going to do this later. And I mean, I had one of the biggest news reporters in Louisville come cameo in it, and that was also a surreal experience to me. Kendrick Haskins, I don't know if some of you guys have seen the Walk in the Park music video by Jack Harlow, but in that music video, Kendrick makes a cameo and interviews Jack, and I thought it would be a super dope idea if we recreated the scene, because it's like, you know, I'm an upcoming artist from Louisville. And I mean, we shot, that was one of the most fun days of my life, just getting to see getting to bring a lot of people together with my vision, like with what I created, getting to see the people around me laugh, see the people around me I love smile with the vision that I created. Like, it was just a surreal feeling. And then, you know, after we dropped the song, I think we dropped the music video a week later. I mean, I remember I was so excited because so many people were waiting on it. I'm pretty sure it touched 1,000 views in like 8 hours. I mean, it was crazy. Yeah. So it was just a crazy experiment. Like, I definitely can't wait to do another one.
Yeah, and I can attest to that, because me and Jamie, we didn't go to the same high school, but all his boys go to my high school. Mm-hmm. Everyone was asking, like, and trying to, like, get their hands on the video, you know, see a preview or see something of it, just because, like, no one at your age was, like, doing this, especially because, like, how well-known you were in the high school scene, just, like, having a lot of friends everywhere. Everyone really wanted to, like, see what it actually looked like. And there were a lot of people that were trying to see that video before it came out, just because, like, no one could really believe, like, oh, shit, this is actually, like, happening.
I remember I went to one of our friends' graduation parties, and we just got the video done. And I got it back at the graduation party. And I told one person, I kid you not, bro, 20, 30, 40, just people just kept coming up. And I was like, hey, 24 hours, it's out. So
yeah,
it was crazy experience. It was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's great, though, that first video did numbers like that.
Yeah, for sure. It was awesome. It was very, very well produced and shot by Alan, so.
Are you looking for your next great golf shoe? Well, Skoni might have what you're looking for. Voted the best new product at the 2023 PGA Show, the perfect fusion of style, comfort, and functionality for golfers who really do demand more in their game. With innovative gripping trends that replace traditional spikes in golf shoes, provide superior stability on the course, with a unique slip-on design for effortless wear, and shock-absorbing soles featuring removable insoles and a machine-washable fabric, these lightweight, breathable shoes provide all-day cushioning whether you're teeing off or heading back to the clubhouse. If you would like to get your hands on these shoes, go to their website, skoni.com, and at checkout, use code UNC or code UNC for 15% off your purchase. Go check out Skoni Golf Shoes. They're the future of the golf shoe industry. So, yeah, I want to talk now a little more about the hill that you brought up earlier. I was able to go because I go to Ole Miss. I came back home for that Kentucky-Ole Miss game, and I was able to go see Jaden for the first time perform at the hill in Lexington. And I'll let him take away from here, but he really did put on a show. But, like, you take it away from here.
Yeah, I mean, that day was a super exciting day for me. I mean, shout out Aaron Hill. He's like family to me. He's like an uncle to me. So it's cool that he's given me this opportunity, you know, try to bring up Lexington with me as well as Louisville. So that's a cool thing that I'm really trying to do. But, I mean, that day, like, the nerves were just, they were just boiling my body.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can't tell you how nervous I was for this show. Like, I can't tell you. It was just insane. But, you know, I knew that I was going to go in there and tear the roof off the place. Like, that's what I went in there. That's what I plan to do at every single show. I mean, because I know no matter how hard I go, someone's always going to go harder. So, I mean, I walked in the hill. I mean, we had a pregame in our room. I probably shouldn't be saying this, but shout out my RAs, but. We had like a couple people in our room before the show, and we were all hyped. And that was another cool thing that I could, like, I brought all these people together to come watch my show. And we walked over. I mean, I had a full camera team with me, and it was just awesome. I mean, flashes going off. We walked into the hill. All my friends got in with me, and Brady Morgan, my best friend, he's actually working under my name right now, doing sound technician stuff for me, setting all my stuff up at all my shows here in Lexington. And he set me up. Mr. Hill gave me the go, and that 4 hours was just a fever dream. I mean, the people were jumping. They were going crazy. I saw all my friends in the crowd. I mean, we had the stage 40 deep at one time. I mean, it was insane. I mean, the energy was just electric, you know. And it's cool because it's like, I'm an 18-year-old kid. You know, a lot of 18-year-olds don't get this opportunity to play at, like, SEC school like that. And the content we got out of it was crazy. I mean, I think the reel we put out did almost 30,000 views. So it was just cool putting my name out in Lex, putting my face out to all the students here. You know, I'm getting noticed on campus and stuff, which is such a cool feeling to me. Like, I'm walking to class and people are like, oh, you know, it's a cool, super cool feeling. So, I mean, that show was super important to me because it kind of helped put me on the map in Lexington. And I'm just glad all my friends were there. You know, that's what made me super nervous, but I'm just glad all my friends got to see me do what I love, you know, and I'm pretty sure I did a good job. So,
I can attest you, it was a good show. Cause, like, it's a lot from my perspective, and I bet a lot of other people's, we see what you do on the social media side. We see all the stuff that comes out. We see the videos of what you do at these venues. But then going to actually see you go and do it, like, I had really no idea what to expect. Because I walked in, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot Jaden's performing here. So I was like, I'll just try and walk in as close up. You had that place bumping. Like, like the crowd was flowing based off of the music that you were playing. Like, you knew exactly, like, what to do, what to play. And, yeah, I mean, you really did kill it. Like, everything sounded good. Like,
thank you. And, you know, another thing I was super nervous about was I'm an electronic music artist. I play house music. So, one thing I told you I'm really good at is crowd control. That's a skill I've learned. That's a skill I grew up learning. Shout out K-Dog. Shout out Vice. I watched them be one of the – shout out Diplo. I watched them just control the crowd, you know, play the crowd. So I went in there not knowing what to expect. I came in with a full house set. You know, I didn't know if the college kids would like it. But that's where I came in and was like, all right, let me do best of both worlds. Let me get some white girl music. Let me get some, you know, college bangers. And then turn them into a house remix or find a house remix of it and have the best of both worlds, have the place jumping and have them singing every single word to every song I play. So that was just something that I feel I did a really good job at. I mean, it was a super fun set that I played. I mean, it was awesome. Just like I said, getting to see all the people I love in the crowd, some of my best friends, getting to really see me do what I love. Because, you know, most of these clubs I play back home, most of these clubs I'm playing on tour, they're all 21 plus, so, you know, I can't really bring any of my friends. And all my friends at the college scene came out, and, I mean, it was just, shout out Aaron for giving me the opportunity.
Yeah, it was something, it was something. So, next I want to talk about is another single that you dropped, and that would be Slide City. So, I heard that one too, but again, talk about how that came to fruition, how, you know, lyrics came, but like, talk about Slide City and like, how was that after doing You Don't Know My Name and doing that first one, what was it like doing Slide City, your second one?
Slide City, man, that song took off. That song was a big record for me. Slide City came about, it's actually a funny story. So, I have a group chat with some upcoming producers and DJs, and we call it the Avengers. It's my boy Evan, Matt. Some of you guys know Shanks. I mean, he's blowing up right now. 1.5 million monthly listeners on Spotify. I mean, he's doing his thing. And Smokes. And a couple other guys. Soleil, like, a couple other guys. And, you know, I was thinking about my next single. I need to get a new song out. I need to do this. You know? And I get a text from my dad, Joey Wagner, and he says, yo, that new Yukon by Justin Bieber is hot. Like, you guys need to touch that up. And so I proposed the idea to Smokes and EVD, Evan, and I was like, boys, we gotta get on this record. Like, we gotta touch this up. They were like, bet. So that night, we got the acapella from the Justin Bieber song, Yukon, and it was originally supposed to be a Yukon remix, and we ended up just leaving the first Yukon part out, the pull up in a Yukon. We ended up leaving that out and just started the song out with Slide City. We were like, yo, this doesn't even sound like the original song. Like, maybe we should just make this our own song. And we whipped it up in 30 minutes. All three of us were on a Discord call just chatting it up. And we created something that is probably one of the best records I've ever worked on. I mean, that song has reached some ears I never thought it was going to reach. I mean, I hear it on campus. I mean, I heard it's getting played down at Ole Miss all the time. So that's just such a cool feeling to me. Like, it's the second most streamed place it's in is like Brazil or something. So, like, that's just crazy. And I think it's almost at 50,000 streams right now on Spotify, 20,000 on Apple Music, like tens of thousands on SoundCloud. So, I mean, that was a cool process because we never thought we were going to be able to put it out on streaming platforms because obviously it's a Justin Bieber sample, but
yeah,
we did it, we put it out, and I mean, it popped off. It really did some good numbers, and it helped put me more on the map in the production scene, because that's really all it is nowadays, is just producing. Playing shows is part of producing. You can't DJ without making your own music. I mean, you can, but you can't really take it to the next level if you're not making your own music. So, I mean, Slide City was awesome, and another thing is Smokes. I met Smokes on TikTok, bro, and we ended up working on this record. And then he ended up coming to Louisville, and we played it live in front of 1,000 people, and that was just a crazy experience, you know, like seeing a guy I've talked to on the internet, worked on music with on the internet for 4 or 5 months, come visit me and stay with me for a week and play two shows together. I mean, and play our song live, and seeing people in the crowd sing every single word, I mean, like, that's just a feeling you can't beat. So, Side City was a great record. I love that record.
So, when it comes to really, like, remixing and then producing your own song, do you have a preference of which one you do, or is it, like, more of just how you're feeling in the moment of, like, what you want, which one you want to attack?
Okay, so when I right now I'm not really focused on remixing because I'm trying to get more originals out, because that's how you really get your foot in the door with original songs that you created from scratch.
Yeah.
But remixing and producing, I mean, it's the same thing. Producing, so what I do, say I was going to make a remix right after this, I would find a song I want to remix, find something that's popping, find something that's hot on the Billboard right now, download the acapella to it, and just add the Good Groove touch to it. So, I mean, I'll sit and work on a remix for 4 to 5 hours, and after that, I'll usually have a good basis of a layout, or I'm usually close to being finished with the song or knowing what I want to do with it, and it'll take me a couple other days to fix it up, like mix and master, make sure it sounds good on speakers and stuff. But yeah, every song I do is different, but it still has that unique Good Groove sound I think I'm finding right now. I think I am kind of settling down on one sound that suits me, suits my vibe. And I know we talked about it on the first podcast, like, I'm still trying to find my sound, you know, but I think we're getting there. I think we're getting there, Chas. So.
Yeah, I think you're finding your groove, really.
Yeah.
I think you're really starting to find it, just like, because that's what makes every artist, like, they have to have a touch. You have to have touch to yourself. Or, like, you have to have a sound that's, like, people are going to recognize. Like, when a Drake song comes on, you know it's Drake. When it's a Baby song, you know it's Lil Baby. It's, like, that's how you know it's, like, people can just identify. Like, that's the biggest thing in music, is that, like, if you're at a club or something and someone can just identify that song, like, right then and there, that's how you know that you really do have a touch, because it doesn't sound like everything else.
Yeah, same thing with, like, a John Summit record. I mean, John Summit has his very, like, euphoric, you know, dark kind of sound, and that's him. You know it's a John Summit record when it comes on. Disco Line, he's got more of, like, a disco, like, summer vibe sound, like No Broke Boys, for example. Like, that was a huge record this summer. I mean, one of the biggest records this summer. I mean, I'm pretty sure it went platinum. Like, you know that's a Disco Line's record when it comes on, you know? Like, just from the sound and the beat. And that's one thing that's important to me figuring out right now still. But, yeah, I think my sound's starting to come.
Oh, yeah, I mean, 1,000%. And so, like, that's awesome. So, now I'll talk about a little bit of consistency. Like, how often do you want to start dropping your originals? Obviously, you know, it takes a lot of time. It takes months for these things, like, really trial and error before you really can get it, because it's not just something that, like, you're going to hit it on the very first try. It takes time. But how often, or, like, how consistently are you looking to drop originals while you're also doing these other shows, like, at the Hill and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, I got a big tour coming up soon that I really haven't really talked about on social media yet, but all I'm going to say is New York is the first stop, and Downswing producing with that. I mean, I'm making music everywhere I am, on the road, on the airplane, whatever it is, in the car, in my dorm room. So, I would say every 1 to 2 months. I mean, I've been grinding. Like, I've really been chilled out on producing, you know, trying to find the balance between school and music right now. So before I came, I mean, I pushed out 15 original tracks that I just got loaded up in the vault, and after this next one I got coming out, the next one's even better. So
I can't wait. And so, you know, you just mentioned it, so I'll jump into that segment next. When people think of this city, you know, you got Madison Square Garden, you got the New York Knicks, you got the Giants, it's the Big Apple, New York City, one of the biggest cities in the world. So you have a very special opportunity. You get to go there to perform in front of a completely different crowd. This isn't an Atomic. This isn't the Hill. It's not like you're going into your home field or your backyard. You're stepping into a completely different state, one of the biggest cities in the world. Just talk about, you know, how you're feeling going into that, and, like, how you're looking to attack going into that. Because, like you said, you don't know how your stuff's going to hit, but, like, how are you looking to just prepare and then go attack New York?
So, obviously, I try to make my sets unique as possible, and shout out to Illenium for having me out. I mean, Illenium is one of the biggest names in dance music history. He's a household name, and, I mean, it's a dance music scene. Like, New York City is one of the capitals of dance music, besides Miami and Ibiza and stuff like that, so, and Chicago. So, I think, I mean, it's right up my alley. You know, I haven't started working on a set yet, but I'm gonna try to go as hard as I can. You know, it's an older crowd. I mean, I'm pretty sure they said a management just told me the show sold out in 30 minutes, and Illenium's on a world tour right now. So, I mean, he's killing it right now. I mean, he's gonna play a crazy set. And, you know, I mean, it's just a dream. You know, I can't. 1 year ago today, I uploaded my first ever TikTok of me DJing. I kid you not, I was getting torched, and you know that.
Oh,
you know,
yes,
I got sent in a couple group chats. You know it.
Yes, no, you were sent in a lot of group chats, and like that's something we talked about this first one. I'll bring it up again. That's something not a lot of people will come back from. Is like they just because they can't take the smoke. A lot of people would just duck immediately, drop everything, forget the whole thing. You didn't. You were able to survive that wave that I feel like the best half to survive, where it's like every, like whether it's an artist, a DJ, they all have like a hate wave that's going to come at them at some point. I mean, Drake probably had hit one of his bigger hate waves last year. But guess what? He was able to survive it, come out with new stuff, and remind everyone who the hell he is. It's like you got to just be able to, hey, shit's going to hit the fan sometimes, but if you let that affect you, then you're never going to get anywhere.
Yeah, like that's a big thing for me. I mean, I never care what anyone says. I don't. It's me versus me at the end of the day. You know, only one who's going to beat me down is me. You know, I don't care what anyone else says. I don't care what the critics say. I don't care what the fucking politics are saying. I don't really care about what anyone's saying. As long as I'm doing me and I'm doing what I love. If they're not talking shit, you're not going crazy enough.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, something that, like, this is probably, you could probably relate to this too. It's like, whether it's boos, whether it's cheers, you're listening. You're tuning in. Exactly. You've listened to the song. You're giving me downloads. You're giving me streams.
Yep.
So you can talk shit at the end of the day, but you're still listening.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, back on that topic from when I first started out, I mean, obviously, you know, I was known in the high school scene, and no one came out of left field, you know, 1 year ago. 1 year ago today, it came straight out of left field, and everyone was like, what the hell are you doing? This isn't you. This isn't you. And I stuck with what I love. I kept making music. I started pushing out content, and now I'm playing a show in one of the biggest cities in the world, opening up for one of my idols. So, I mean,
yeah.
The people listening right now, do what you love. Don't give a shit about what anyone says.
Yeah.
Follow your dreams.
Yeah, because, I mean, we already said it, but it's like, sometimes one door closes, and that was baseball for you. That baseball door, as much as you loved baseball, you played it all your life, that door had to close to open up this one.
Yeah,
because,
exactly.
And that's what happened.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. I mean, I was wanting to play college baseball, and, you know, I fell out of love with baseball, and I fell in love with something new, and now I'm doing this full time. It's, I mean, it's going to be the career for the rest of my life, so. Actually, it's a crazy feeling, you know?
Yeah. So I want to talk about something else right now. So obviously now, if you don't know, Joey Wagner is one of the biggest people in Louisville. He worked with the founder of Jay Wagner Group. You are now licensed under him, and you are like one of his clients now. Talk about how cool that is, that like you get to work with your dad now instead of just, you know, your dad being off on the side, then now, like, you're actually one of his clientele when he has some of the biggest clientele, like, in the city and just outside the city as well.
I mean, yeah. I mean, when I first started out, you know, I was getting a lot of, you get to do this because of your dad, you get to do this because of, you know, your dad, blah, blah, blah. And don't get me wrong, we talked about it on the first podcast. It'd be dumb of me to not utilize that. But now it's like, I'm working with him. He works for me, like, you know? And it's crazy because, you know, I grew up in my dad's shadow, you know? So now that I got my own thing going on, it's like people are reaching out to him now. People are saying, oh, you're Good Groove's dad, you know? So that's a cool thing to me. Like, you know, people know me as Good Groove. Like, some people down here don't even know my name. Like, it's crazy. So, like, now that people are noticing me for my own person, my own image, and my own thing, and talking to my dad about that, people are trying to get in contact to my dad for me. I mean, it's just crazy feeling because, I mean, I love my dad. I love what he does. I mean, he's my biggest supporter. And he's just been a big help throughout this whole journey. And another person I want to talk about is one of my social media managers, Kaylee. And she kills it. I mean, I put out content every single day, and she helps me out with all that stuff. And we got a bunch of big stuff coming out soon. And yeah, shout out Kaylee. But yeah, my dad, he's the GOAT.
Yeah, I mean, that's just something, because I can talk about this, because I did some research on him. I go to Ole Miss, for those who don't know. Lane Kiffin, he's the coach at Ole Miss here. If you don't know his story, his dad was one of the – he was a very good coach. His dad was a very good, well-respected name in the college football scene. And that opened the door for Lane to get some jobs. He got a job, I believe it was Tennessee, the head coach of the Raiders job, and in Tennessee, yeah, those three jobs. And so, but also, it didn't work out for him. I know, I mean, which that's very normal. When you're that young, getting these big head coaching jobs, it's like you're going to get a lot of that criticism. Like, oh, you're a Nepo baby, it was all because of your dad. Well, then he went to Alabama as an offensive coordinator, learned under Nick Saban, and then he goes back, he goes to FAU as a head coach again, wins two conference championships, and then, you know, he's back on the map, goes to Ole Miss, and now he's doing his thing there again. So it's like, it's like, your dad, he worked for this. He worked to be able to give you these opportunities, not to just, like, use his name or, like, just use his name to get up, but, like, he did this so you could be able to get yourself, like, a stepping stool to get up there.
For sure, and, you know, as much as he can provide for me, you know, I wouldn't be doing what I do right now if I wasn't spending 6 to 8 hours in the studio, you know?
Exactly.
Pushing out content every single day. Like, you could say what you guys want, but I'm working harder than anyone else doing this right now, and no one's gonna outwork me, so.
Yeah, I mean, your dad can put your name out on social media as much as he wants, but if you're putting out shitty products and you're not, like, grinding the way you were, it wouldn't matter if he's your dad. Because it's going to be bad product.
You can put, connections are a powerful thing, but you can't teach someone how to make music. You just can't teach that. You know, you got to grind. You got to learn. But you can teach someone how to make music, but you can't teach, you know, playing big shows. You can't, you got to grind. But at the end of the day, like, you know, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now if I wasn't spending those hours in the studio working on music and grinding content, you know? So.
So I was going through your social media before this, and I hadn't clicked on the link before, but I clicked on one of your links in the bio, and upcoming shows was up there. You know, obviously, I saw the New York show, but one that really caught my eye is LSU.
Yeah, so I'm working on that show right now. There's been a little bit of complications that I don't know if I could really talk about on here, but I am hoping to go out to LSU soon and go crazy out there, so that'd be dope.
Yeah, I saw that, and I was like, LSU, that would be, because that's a weekend, right?
A weekend.
Oh, yeah. So, like, you know, that's going to be a big-time football game.
Mm.
Like, LSU's bar-heavy scene as well, so, like, that's perfect for you to go out there and just, like, because LSU, it's also a completely different style of music down there. You know, like, they got the Cajun style down there. Yeah. It's, like, that's a completely different, like, culture almost down there in New Orleans, so, like, the fact that, like, you're going down there, hopefully get to go down there and really unlock a new region of, like, the States is going to be very cool to see.
Yeah, I'm excited. Hopefully it all works out.
Yeah. Well, Jaden, thank you for coming back on.
I got one more thing.
What's up?
What's up? I got a single dropping first week of October.
Ooh.
Too far away. I haven't announced it on social media. I announced I'm dropping it first week of October yet, but I haven't dropped, like, an official date or a pre-save or anything, and that should be coming in the next 2-3 days, so might as well talk about it now. I wrote the song Too Far Away my first week of college, and it's a very special record to me. I don't know if you've seen the clips of it or not, but, I mean, it's doing really well on social media right now. I mean, the last 3 videos I put out have all touched over 10,000 views, and I'm super excited for this one because this song is a very special record to me. And, you know, I was at a very hard point when I got to college because I was scared. I didn't know if I was going to be able to grind music still. I didn't know if I was going to be, obviously I knew I was going to be able to grind music still, but I didn't know how much time was going to get taken away from my passion and my grind because of school and, you know, hanging out with my friends, you know, just trying to make everyone happy. So I sat in my room and, you know, I wrote the song about, you know, just the last summer I had with some of the people that I love, And it's just a beautiful record. I mean, and I can't wait for it to come out. So I just wanted to get on here and talk about that record coming out. It should be a big one. I think it's really going to take off. And yeah, thank you.
What's the name of it again?
Too Far Away.
Too Far Away? Okay, give me some clickbait here. Give me some good clickbait here.
Hell yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, yeah, Jaden, always a pleasure having you on.
Always a pleasure.
I know you're going to continue to kill it. If I'm ever back in Lex, I'll try and get to a show. It's always great to hear you and see what you're doing. So, but hey, keep doing your thing. This has been another episode of the Uncensored Podcast. I'm Carter Haas.
I'm Good Goof.
Thank you for listening.